You're listening to Jungle Janna Radio with Jungle Janna and Angel Garcia, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jungle Janna.
Yeah, what are you doing? Can you hear me?
I can hear Jungle Janna. I love the song.
Okay. I do too. Well, that happens to be when we were out with Joshua seeing whales.
That was on my boat years ago. Beautiful.
Years and years ago.
That's great.
I can't hear Janna.
So I apologize.
You can't hear me?
I can hear Josh just fine.
Hey, Angel. How you doing? Josh?
I'm doing good, buddy. How's everyone doing this? I'm going to say this afternoon.
Yeah, it's afternoon down here as well. I mean, I think we're pretty close on the time zones. Down in Costa Rica, it's the same all year round. You know, they don't do daylight savings. You know, it's everyone kind of has their own. It's 12 hours of sun, 12 hours of night, all year round. So your body clock really gets set. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of know what time it is just by the light of day or by what birds are singing outside. You kind of know what time it is. No one has a watch down here. I think the only watch people have just tells you what day it is, you know, not like what hour it is.
So they wear calendars.
Pretty much just wearing a big calendar, you know. you forget, you know, we down here, it gets dark so early. It gets dark at 6 o'clock, you know, every night. It's pitch black about 6:15. So we call 9 o'clock. We call that OSA midnight.
You know OSA what I mean? Midnight.
Because it's already been dark 3 hours. So by 9 o'clock, you're like, hey, what time is it? It's like, is it like 11? And your friends are like, it's 8, you know, because it's already been dark so long. It seems like it's later than it is, but that's the culture here. It's a kind of a go to bed early, get up early kind of culture here, because the mornings are so nice and it gets dark so early. It's just the way it is.
Well, I'm back. Can y'all hear me now?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. The mouth is back. Well, I want to say this, Joshua. This morning I was on the show with on radio in Texas with Angel, and Kate Walker came in. Remember the three women that saw the baby whale be born a year before last?
Yeah,
she was on the radio with us this morning in Texas.
She's the singer? No.
No, she's a psychologist.
Oh, she's a psychologist.
And,
okay,
or
well,
a singer.
I mean,
and a singer.
Well, she's a singing psychologist. I don't know if that's a good match.
I think they kind of go together, but I remember there was a Katie that was down here that was just the most amazing singer.
That's Bobby Starr's daughter.
Okay, yeah. Okay. She was unbelievable. Yeah. And I got to hear her sing. She had her own guitar and everything, and my friend played guitar with her and was like, we were all kind of blown away. And when you get to see baby whales being born, you're kind of just like, what's going on here? You're kind of rubbing your eyes going, am I really seeing this? And they've come from Antarctica all the way up, what's this, 6,500 miles, all the way up here. It's a long way, and they've figured it out. They figured out, like, here's a safe haven to come in, right? There's no predators in here. It's deep water. So all these humpbacks come all the way up. And this gulf has become kind of like the maternity ward of the ocean. You know, it's like everything, it's all these babies are being born in here with the humpback whales and also with the dolphins too. There's a lot of moms and babies here. And then when it's kind of like our life cycle, when they're reaching adulthood, they go out into the real world, the ocean. All right. And then they spend their lives out in the ocean. And then when they retire, they come back in to the Gulf. Old Dool say here, they come back into the Gulf because they know they can retire here and it's all calm. There's no predators. And there's all the food you could ever want. So it's a pretty good life.
So then it's true. Everybody wants to retire in Costa Rica.
For us as well. I mean, you know, all the fish that are here, you can, you know, anything you pull up, you can eat because there's no heavy industry. You know, there's no mercury and weird whatever in the water. You know what I mean? So it's a blue zone for people and animals as well. So I don't know. The dolphins seem to love it. The whales figured it out and they're smart. So they're traveling a long way to get here. And then no one wants to be born in ice cold Antarctic water, right?
No.
So the water here is like 80 degrees, so that's better.
You know?
And you don't have to worry about orcas just, you know, wanting to snatch you up right out of the gate. So it's amazing. And probably every year, I don't know, 30 to 50 humpback whales are born right here.
Wow.
You know, that's just my estimate that what we see, you know, there's no real anyone studying any of this because it's all like kind of new, you know. No one even really knew before 20 years ago or something that even this was even happening. So it's all kind of happening.
And who discovered that it was happening? Who discovered that it was happening?
Well, the National Geographic put some trackers on them, on the whales, maybe 20 some years ago, and they didn't like it. I remember seeing them getting hit with the little thing on the back with a little blow dart kind of thing. They didn't like that. But then we got to watch them where they went. And this also coincided with a ocean current study. They used coconuts to study the ocean currents. They wanted something like, instead of buoys floating around, there were coconuts with GPSs on them. And they had 50 of them. And we were such nerds. We're like watching at the internet cafe. Watching these coconuts float around the world, you know, and the farthest one went 2,000 miles away and landed in South America and planted itself. So we got to see how the currents work, and they started following the whales back, and they went all the way to Antarctica. And they're like, oh, shit, they go to Antarctica? You know, we know they come from Alaska and California, and, you know, there's in Hawaii and all this coming down. So this whole Antarctica migration is within the last 25 years, as far as I know. And it's 6,500 miles to come up here to have your baby here and relax. You know, it's like when people go on vacation to Costa Rica, you're like, oh, I made it. You know, I can relax now, you know?
Exactly.
With coconuts as well. You know, we're just like coconuts. We're just looking for a nice beach to land on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
well, listen, I wouldn't mind doing it. Just don't shoot me with a dart in my back.
Yeah, and no. Come on. They were thrashing and throwing their tails.
I got you. I'll call you and tell you where I'm at. You don't have to dart me.
No. I'll check in. When you see the moms, when they're doing the tail slapping and up and down, we start to notice that means they're in the birthing process. They're trying to move the baby out. Mm. You know, the whale, the baby weighs like 2 tons or something. So she's like, get this thing out of here. You know? So she's slapping the tail up and down and you're seeing this motion. You're like, wow, what's going on? And you get closer and then here's the baby coming out. First breath, mom bringing the baby up to breathe, you know, teaching the baby like, hey, you got to do this. Here's, you know.
Well, it's kind of scary the first time because the baby's thinking and they're like, oh, no, it's sinking. The mom has to keep pushing it back up to the
top. Where am I? And
pushing it back up to the top.
That's true. It's so important to not have the baby be really scared at that moment because they might just dive. Then it might be hard for the mom to catch up to the baby, right? So, and then, you know, then there's the nursing happening and, you know, there's you know, you thought 2% milk was bad. You know, try some 60%, you know, that'll fatten you up real quick. So it's truly amazing. And I feel so blessed all the time to live in a place like this where all the stuff is just happening all around me. And if you got your eyes open, there it is, right?
So did you get Josh's story about how he got here and got there in Costa Rica? It's a very interesting story.
No, I did not.
Story.
What is this, like an origin story or something?
The origin story, how you ended up in Costa Rica, what you do.
You know, me and my, I came down with my dad. We were, this is like in the early 90s. My dad was always an old surfer, right? So we had the Surfer magazine and we see something about Costa Rica in there. I'm like, hey, let's go. And so I think this was like 94. And me and my dad come down. We spend a month in Costa Rica just traveling around and surfing and traveling from the northern part coming down. We loved it so much. Came back every year for 5-6 years in a row. And then 1999, I get a call from a friend of mine from high school. He gets a job as a chef. He's like, you'll never believe where I got a job as a chef. Puerto Jimenez, Costa Rica.
Wait, who is this dude?
My friend, his name is Joe Lindbergh.
Okay, different.
And so right when Crocodile Bay Lodge was opening, he was related to the wife of the owner. And so I go, yeah, I don't believe you. Like, because I've always wanted to visit there. Yeah, but we've never been down all the way down here. You know, back in those days, it was always you're reading the travel guide and the Four Doors books, you know, and they have these things that would say, well, you know, be careful if you go down there, the rivers will rise up and you'll be swept away. So we're always, you just don't know, right? And so after that, my buddy, he lives here. I'm like, hey, we're going, right? So this is 1999. We land on Thanksgiving Day. So he has a house right by the airport and by the boat dock. And so my dad's kind of like, you know, how are we going to know where they are? I'm like, just trust me, you know? And I'm asking my friend, I'm like, how are we going to find you? He's like, when you land on the plane, just look to the right. I'm like, okay, that's pretty vague, but here we go, right? And so as we're landing, they live in, there's a house right there with three stories and there's a pool on top. It's the only place like this. And it's Thanksgiving. They're having a party. They're roasting turkeys and everyone's waving at us, you know, as we're landing in the plane. So everyone's waving. There's all these people there. And I look over at my dad. He's like, well, this looks pretty good. You know, I was like, okay. So they pick us up. We get to meet everyone from the town. This night, we get to meet like 50 people that first night. And from then on, it continued with this amazing vibe and love. And after that time, we just kept coming back here, you know. And, you know, maybe 5 years later, I had a chance to move down and kind of take that step where you take a step and you don't really know what's below your feet. You just leap of faith kind of thing.
Yeah.
I did it. And here we are to about 22 years later. I moved here in 2004 and I got to study with botanists and biologists and all this stuff. You know, I had no idea about that. I was a stonemason in the States. I used to be building, you know, the chimney and all this stuff in the house, you know, building the fireplace. No one's got fireplaces down here. You know what I mean? No one
hey, but you're building.
It's too hot to have a fireplace.
You're so building beautiful indoor showers.
Yeah, outdoor showers, waterfalls.
Oh, everything beautiful. Now, here we waterfall. Go. Yeah, he's good. He's got it going down there now.
So I got really lucky to learn and study with these guys where I'm following them, you know, all these amazing biologists around me going, I'm just like, wow. It's just an endless stream of knowledge everywhere you go around here. And so I'm just trying to soak it up, and I still am. So here we are.
So the southern hemisphere whale humpbacks are there now, and they cohabitate with the northern ones. When do the northern humpback whales come down?
Well, the southern ones are on their way. I mean, in the middle of June, late June, they start showing up. Then you got July and August, they're all showing up. And that's when you like, usually you can't guarantee anything in nature. You know, you're like, hey, what's our chances of seeing this? You know, and I always say, well, if you don't go, it's zero, right? Zero chance.
Yeah.
But it's if true. You go, now here's a chance. You know what I mean? But in July and August and September, it's almost 100% whales.
Yeah.
You just cruise out, and here they start showing up. And then October, November, then the northern ones are coming down. You know, and then there's maybe a little overlap in there. So, but again, the whale seasons for me before they used to be shorter. Now it's almost all year. You know what I mean? You can see them. They've realized that this is a sanctuary for them. And so they come more often, and the time they're here stretches out. So summer showing up in mid-June. Now it's going all the way to December, and now you're still seeing them in December too. So that's like half the year. You know, before it used to be a couple months where like you can guarantee right. You see the whales. And it keeps getting more and more. They figured it out. And
so again, so I guess we could say that the whales are becoming Josh Sibley. You know, they're just kind of showed up and they're going to stick around.
Yeah, we're like,
well, their populations are growing.
I'm not saying their I'm smart or anything. I'm just saying, it's kind of, I like to say, like, yeah, I like they're kind of like me. Like, why would you leave? Why do they leave? You know, but the food, you know, we don't have quite the right kind of plankton here for them to sustain themselves all year round. Otherwise, they'd just stay. You know, but you get down to Antarctica, you know, now you're getting into the krill. You're getting into the good stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like eating lobster tail all day long, you know. Here you're eating like little mini shrimps in the rice. Hard to sustain that way. So otherwise, they just stay here the whole time. I always thought, like, why do they leave? But the food, they get all fattened up down there. And then they don't even eat coming up here. They just swim, you know. They're just trying to make it up here to have their babies and make it back, and then they can chill out and just eat lobster tail all day. They're krilling it.
They're okay, krilling it.
They're krilling it.
So what else is happening down there now?
Well, we have, I mean, all year round, like with the pod, we have two kinds of dolphins that live here all year round, you know, in the Gulf of Dulce, the sweet Gulf. You know, we're always talking, why is it so sweet? Well, fresh water floats on the top of the Gulf, right? So we have all these rivers flowing in. Fresh water floats on top of salt water. And so it's the sweet Gulf because it has this cap of fresh water. You know, I lived in Seattle for many years as well, and we get lots of rain up there. We get about, you know, 50 inches of rain a year. Here we get about 200 inches of rain a year. So that's four times more than Seattle. But here's the thing. We get sun every morning here. You don't get that in Seattle. So you have a cap of fresh water floating on top of the Gulf. And so you don't even smell the ocean here.
Hmm.
But you have two kinds of dolphins that live here and a huge pod of the pan-tropical spotted dolphins, 300 in the pod that live here all year round. Hmm. People are like, what? Really? Yeah, really. Like, it's like me. Like, why would you leave? They don't. You know, it's the moms and the babies.
Talk about those spinner dolphins, 20,000 in a group offshore.
Spinners are just offshore when you get out.
Unbelievable.
You leave. They're in the real world when you get out of the Gulf. You're in the real ocean. Then then you have the spinners as well. They have the fin that kind of points forward, and they love to spin. And you know, when you're going out fishing, you want to find, you know, the spinner dolphins because they're chasing tunas. You get in front. And then when you're throwing bait out to catch fish, the dolphins never eat the bait. It's all around them. But they will never eat a fish that's on a hook, ever. You're catching tuna right in the middle of all these dolphins. They're just way too smart. They see. They're like, yeah, I see the line. I see the boat. Like, yeah, you're not fooling me. Yeah. Tunas are just like, just give me something.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. And of course, we have the bottlenose dolphin, you know, the top of the food chain here in the Gulf with, like 500-pound carnivore razor sharp teeth. Luckily, they're nice, right? if they were evil, I think the ocean would just be closed. I'm like, I'm not going in there. You see that thing? But they're nice. They're always smiling, and they have a relationship with people. You know, thank goodness we haven't blown that one yet. We're working on it. But bottlenose dolphins like to be by the rivers. We have all these mangroves here. You know, huge mangrove. 300 different little estuaries here, just in this area, and they always hang out there because the tides change 10, 12 feet every 6 hours.
Mm.
There's a lot of water moving up and down, and the fish run in there to hide in the roots during the high tide. So for half the day, they're safe, you know? The other half, you're on your own because there's no water in the river, right? You're on your own. But that half the day...
I want to talk about Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson?
Can we talk about Mel Gibson?
This isn't the Hollywood mm-hmm. Hour.
No, it is, because he's down there.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he's got a couple houses down here.
Yeah, yeah, on the Osa, right there in the park, right out of the park. Yeah,
he's been he's doing kind of like an ocean conservation thing where he helped fund one of the boats that goes out to.
Oh, okay.
Stop people, but you have to be, if you're going to do long lining and you're going to do all this kind of that kind of fishing, you have to be 50 miles offshore from here, from the shoreline, you have to be 50 miles off. Well, so who's going to patrol that area?
Yeah. You know,
the Coast Guard's got other things to worry about.
Well, so let me ask you this then, Josh and Jenna. So you've got, conservationists and things like that in an area that already sounds like to me is filled with a lot of people who are really grateful for what they have, right? The Costa Ricans who what it sounds like really protect their nature and things like that. Why so much conservationist or conservationism, whatever you want to call it, there, why go where it sounds like everything's already taken care of rather than going out somewhere else to give a message?
There's still problems.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fair question, because why would you even need outside influence if Costa Rica's already doing the job,
Sure.
Wow. I mean, we're lucky because where we live, we're looking at areas where it still looks the same as it did 500 years ago. Like nothing's ever been touched. It's all primary rainforest all around. And, we're living in a spot down here where it's so out of the way. There's no real infrastructure for what to do. And they still kind of don't know really what to do. You know what I mean? There's no park rangers that can patrol all these areas. Yeah. So you get a drone and you just fly the drone over, and that can take the place of now you don't need all these trails and horse trails. Now there's no trails. Right, you just fly the drone over with some thermal imaging, and if anyone's in there starting a fire, or anyone's cutting down some trees, then you can send some people in there too.
Gotcha. So,
again, I'm not one to be, pumping up the the technology and how great it is, but there's some areas where it definitely does come in handy, and usually. When we're looking at spots over here, there's maps that are 500 years old.
Gotcha.
Right? That when you look at the map, it's got little things that say Punta Tortuga, Turtle Point. You look at it. It still looks like a turtle. This was 500 years ago. It still looks the same. There's not too many places left that have the same viewpoint. So you can kind of go back in time here, too. I love this.
I want you to tell the history of how they discovered the Gulf of Dulce. History of how they discovered the Gulf of Dulce. I hear this on all his tours.
Well, again, where's the fact check out? No, I'm just kidding. So the guy's name was Davila, Francisco Davila, Portuguese sailor. This is like 1522. So this map, the map they made Costa Rica has the map. Like Portugal gave it as a gift. You know, it's there. Mm-hmm. It has all these little X marks the spots, and it says Punta Tortuga. And so when they pulled in here, before they got here, they're all on the Caribbean side. You know, no one's on the Pacific side. And so this captain starts sending guys out onto land on the Caribbean side. Like, I'll pick you up in a couple weeks or a month. Let's see what you find, you know? He comes back and picks up these guys. He's like, what'd you find? They're like, well, we found a whole nother ocean. We walked up on a mountain. There's a whole nother ocean over there. And it's a totally different color. And then the captain de Villa, he goes, okay, guys, start taking the boat apart. We're going to walk it over there. And then the crew's like, oh, shit. Why did we say anything? This is going to be terrible, right? So take the boat apart, walk it up over a mountain, the continental divide, you know, and then back to the Pacific, put the boat back together. Now you're sailing in an ocean. You have no idea where you are. So, you know, anytime you think your life is hard, just saying, everyone, it's not that hard. Like, that was hard.
And they landed in the Gulf. They came in the Gulf of Dulce. That's how they found it.
Yeah, they made a crude kind of map of the Gulf of Dulce. And you know what they loved about here is because it's so deep right on the shoreline. It's a tropical fjord, right? We've heard this. Jacques Cousteau made up a whole new word, tropical fjord, you know, because of how deep it is. Instead of a wall of ice, like most fjords, it's a wall of volcanic rock, tectonic plates sliding under each other and pushing straight up like this. And so he makes up this word, Jacques Cousteau. And the other scientist is like, Jacques, there's no such thing as a tropical fjord. He's like, there is now. Something like that. I'm pretty sure that's how it went. When they start sailing in here, they start getting close to shore. They have a guy on the front of the boat with all these ropes and chains. And, you know, as soon as they hit the bottom, they stop, throw out the anchor, and they row in. Well, they kept getting closer, and everyone's looking at this guy on the front. He's like, keep going. And it's 400, 500 feet deep right on the shore. It's straight up and down.
Yeah, that's amazing. So
there's no places like this. There's like two or three places like this in the entire world that aren't ice. You know, this is tectonic plates pushing up straight up like this, and it's straight up and down. So you're in the boat in 400 feet of water looking straight up into the forest. It's amazing. Waterfalls falling right into the water, things like this. So they love that. So they could come, they could get close to shore and fill up with water in the, you know, the casks or whatever they called them, you know, and then head back out. And then they had to take the boat apart again, walk it back over, and then sail back to Portugal. Like, damn it.
You know? That's amazing.
So even when they Magellaned and went all, you know, they got down to the South America, they're still like, that's no picnic down there either. You know what I mean? So like, maybe it's even easier to still just take the boat apart, walk it over. So
yeah, that's a long one. Yeah. That was way. Yeah. So what's happening with have you heard anything about the swimway? We had Randall.
Wait, say that again.
Swimway? It's a swimway where they have discovered a mountain underwater that connects the Gulf of Dulce to Isla de Coco and across to Galapagos.
Oh my god. Okay.
And no, it's Randall Arouse.
Well, I've heard about this too.
New information. Yeah.
We have what's called you know, a myth. So we have myths in the Oza. Those are mitos. Yeah. In Spanish, it's called a mito. It's a myth. Mm-hmm. So there's all these stories about after World War II, and you know, some people saw some U-boats here, like on their way down to Argentina or something like this, right? And there's a tunnel. So what I found is, you remember the United Fruit Company? You know, United Fruit was based in Golfito, and there was an actor, pretty famous actor. His name was John Wayne. He was friends with these guys. And after one of his movies, he had bought a U-boat from like Victory at Sea movie, and he brought it here, and he tested it out in the Golfo Dulce. John Wayne was in a U-boat with his buddies, like drinking whiskey, smoking cigars, and everyone's seeing this U-boat going, oh, shit, the Nazis are here.
The Germans U-boat. Are
There's
here.
There's a secret tunnel. There's a secret tunnel going over there, and it's really just John Wayne driving around in his U-boat, you know, in like mid-1950s. So that's how these stories start, and I love every part about these stories, too.
Yeah, well, let me give you a little insight onto the swimway. Okay. What it is Randall LaRouse, Pratoma, and all those different organizations have been doing research between the – remember when they were tagging the white-tip sharks and tracking them to where they go into the different parts of the of the ocean? Well, they tracked them. There's all kinds of sea turtles and their ways that they actually – their passage from the Gulf of Dulce to Galapagos to Isla de Coco. And so it just came out in Tico Times. Go read what they've just put out on that.
Okay.
They've got another expedition going in October. Another one. They've got several expeditions with scientists from all over the world this fall. So that information's coming out. But Tico Times did a great article, ticotimes.net, on that.
Hold on. I'm going to stop you real quick.
Okay.
Because you have a paper called Tico Times.
Yeah. TicoTimes.net.
So is that paper always late?
It arrives right on time.
Hey, you know what?
It arrives on Thursday. And they're like, I didn't say which Thursday.
Monday, I came in the studio with Angel. I was 3 minutes late, and I just called it Tico Time.
That's why I'm asking.
So now he knows what Tico Time is.
Sorry. I just wanted to clarify this is just a late paper because that's what Tico Time means to me because of you. But where's this swimway going? Keep telling me.
Yeah.
Well,
very interesting.
Just go to ticotimes.net online and look up about the swimway and about the connection from Gulf of Dulce, where we are talking about today, all the way to Galapagos and Isla de Coco, which is also an island that belongs to Costa Rica. But it's miles? Is it like 300 miles? I don't know what I'm saying. It's a long way.
500 miles. It's actually more in front of like Ecuador or something, but that's where the whole thing was filmed.
Right.
And all the island of Jurassic Park. And then the sound of the dinosaurs from Jurassic Park that they filmed was here. It was like the howler monkeys.
Yeah.
That's the sound of the dinosaurs from the movie. So, I mean, I've seen people like coming out of the woods going, what is that? Are there dinosaurs here? I'm like, it's just a little monkey, you know?
But like it's a little big, monkey, right? Sounds like enormous.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about the animal sounds you do. Do that monkey one more
time. Jana has given us her impression of a howler monkey.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you.
On Texas Radio.
I'm not doing it. It's all about territory. You know, the louder. You know, the howlers do this, so like, this is mine, step away. You know, they're calling out their territory. And there's also a story where the louder the howl, the smaller the balls or something, too. It's like, what are those kind of things as well, too?
It's like the chiquito pero picoso thing. You know?
Picoso. Oh, yeah. Hey, the swimway is very interesting.
Yeah, fabulous.
There's all kinds of stuff here because when we're going around, there's all these areas right in front of you that we've never explored. You know, you're looking at it.
No, you just found one.
No one's ever walked there. You know, it's like there's all these parts that are straight up and down. Yeah.
I don't want you to tell your secret, but you just found one when you were in your boat. That little cove with a cave in it.
I don't want you to tell your secret, but I'm going to tell your secret.
Well, no, I mean, you know, unless you can get my... It's like the Green Lagoon or something. It's wild. I mean, there's always there's so much more to explore. And you know, one of my favorite sayings, of course, is "All I know is I know nothing." You know, so I'm not going to be acting like I know anything because I don't. I'm always open to find new spots and new adventures. Here we are.
I know. So tell me about what's happening in Puerto Jimenez now, since I've left.
Okay.
Well, yeah, give me some of the fun stuff.
Well, no, I mean, well,
no gossip. Been,
the weather has been very rough. I mean, there's all this super El Nino talk around. You know, it's like weather scaring. Everyone's all worried about it. But there has been waves and boats breaking loose of moorings and all this stuff too. And when people want to go to the national park, they're taking boats now, you know, instead of going on land and hiking in for an hour, they take a boat right into the park.
Mm-hmm.
And when you want to get in there and leave that park, it's rough. And so there's a lot of talk going around with the national park system here, and they're trying to, I think there's only about 80 people allowed in every day, something like this.
Right.
And they're trying to even make that less. And so it's a catch 22. Like, you know, you want people to visit and to be able to explore things like this, but
there's always Piedras Blancas, and it's the least visited national park, and it's pretty awesome too.
The most where we go on the boat trip, you know, there's no roads there. So of course this is the least visited national park in the entire country. There's no one there. I mean, the park starts at about 15 meters above sea level. So, you know, there's low-lying areas where people have, they're kind of grandfathered in. You know, there's some houses there. There's a wildlife refuge. There's a, you know, there's some eco lodges over there. Mel Gibson's house, you know, things like this are over there.
Permaculture
Farm. There's a place called the House of Orchids, Casa Orquídeas. It's just a mind-blowing place there, you know, that we used to be able to go and get a little, you know, give them $15, get a little map, and just walk around, and you just taste and smell everywhere you go. I mean, we used to call it the Garden of Eden, just without the guilt, you know, because you can eat whatever you want, you know what I mean, as you make your way around. You know, just like you're just like, wow, just, you know, eat your way through the whole place. It's just incredible.
Yeah, so I was trying to pay attention to everything you said after 15 meters.
But I was still trying 15 to calculate meters of the meters. Elevation becomes national park.
I was still trying to calculate the meters though, because here the only I don't run track, so I don't know meters.
And, me neither.
I thought
we won American. That
war. A meter is like a yard, isn't it?
It's like a yard, except you can't drink out of it. But yeah,
well, it's something like that.
So my U.S. mind was still trying to figure out 15 meters. Okay, he said 15.
Yeah, 45.
What exactly is that?
It's about 45, 50 feet.
Yeah,
above sea level, the national park starts.
Yeah,
and because of how fast it goes up, you know, this is the fastest rising landmass in the world. You know, Central America.
Is it really?
It's, you know, there's, if you think you're a nerd or I'm a nerd, these geologists, they're like, it's rising 1 millimeter every 50,000 years. It's the fastest rising landmass in the world. I'm like, really? Wow. Okay. You know,
that's pretty slow.
Get on ya. You know, so you have South America, North America, and a little skinny little bridge, right, connecting the two. It's still coming up a little bit. So we also call it a traffic jam of nature because everything has to go from this giant continent to this one over this little bridge, you know? So maybe that's why in Costa Rica we have so many species of everything, is because they're all kind of cramming together.
That's amazing.
Is that a good analogy or not?
No, absolutely. That's amazing.
That's a great analogy.
You know, is it really the fastest or the least slowest? You know,
they just have the fastest rising.
Yeah.
That's still amazing.
Because the plates are still sliding under each other and going up. We have about, you know, 20 earthquakes a day here. You know, they're all just all shaking.
Don't scare everybody because I never even feel them where
I am.
You
never told me that.
Don't ever, they're all just in the one. Don't ever set your phone with the earthquake application because it's just banging all day. Bang, 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 bang.
No text, did you feel it? I'm going,
they're all very small.
Very small.
We have maybe two or three over like a four. You know,
but here's what people need to understand, and you do know this. Earthquakes are only bad if you're not prepared for them. And people in Costa Rica, I mean, I was in SEMA Hospital. It's like Baylor Medical there, and they had an earthquake and everything shook, but they're earthquake proof. The places are built. And if you're on the ground in a wooden house, nothing's going to happen.
They overbuild, and the ground just knows how to move.
Even
when we had, I mean, we had a couple 6.1, 6.3 here last couple years.
No big deal.
A lawn chair fell over, you know, like, we will rebuild. You know, it's like this, right? Nothing happens. There's the ground just knows how to move here. I mean, our local saying is, you know, sunny morning, humidity, rainy afternoon, lightning, thunder, earthquake, go to bed. You know, like, tomorrow's the same. You know, like,
if
it's
you
like
get
a daily
that
thing.
Same app, if you get that same earthquake app thing that you can look and look at California and then the West Coast, it's the same thing. If you see how many they're having a day.
Yeah, they're all the earthquakes are around the one in the 1 to 2 range.
Yeah,
and now after a while of living here, you just get used to them, and you can almost call them out. You know,
so Jana,
I don't even wake up for them.
Yeah.
So Jana and Josh. Look, I've never been to Costa Rica, so if I'm going to Costa Rica for the first time, what should be the first thing that anybody going over there for the first time should see? And then, more importantly to me, what should they eat first?
He's a foodie.
Yeah, well, you wake up in the morning after you get here. You have
gallo pinto,
rice and beans. Some people like cilantro. Some people can't handle it. But, you know, the food here, they have Costa Rica all natural ingredients. So the ingredients here with all the vegetables and everything is so flavorful. The fruits here are amazing. Maybe a fruit yogurt granola thing in the morning, like those are unreal as well. And then when you land in the capital, and if you can go right to a volcano, like the next day
that's cool.
Out in a hot springs, and the hot springs are connected to a volcano and you're looking at a volcano, that's amazing, right? The last, you know, we're at the end, like we're 8 hours away in a car from the capital where the airport is, you know, and we're kind of the icing on the cake when you make it down here. But right by the capital, there's all this amazing stuff happening right there. And the volcanic area is unbelievable. I mean, you know, you're tapping in to underground thermals and you're just laying in the water. It's unbelievable. And you're looking like you have the world's largest lava lamp right in front of you. You know, like, what's going on here? Right? It's mind blowing.
Yeah, that's cool. That's Arenal region area. I like that. That's one of my favorite parts.
Beautiful area.
It used to be a Smithsonian Institute lodge where they studied volcanoes.
Arenal Observatory Lodge.
It's awesome.
They have a whole seismograph there. And when I stay there, I'm laying in bed. The whole wall is a window staring directly at the volcano. And it's all red. I got to stay there one time with lava coming down. I could see rocks rolling down the side, smoky rocks coming down. And that's when I got this idea of having the world's largest lava lamp, is because it was right there. And that's when I saw my first big cricket. There was a cricket on my door that was like, you know, it was giant. It was like,
that's not a cricket.
Foot. That was not a cricket. Like, what is this thing? It was like,
Don't ever tell my wife.
No, it's all sloths. It's all sloths and dolphins and rainbows. You know what I mean? So,
okay, good, because my wife, her biggest fear is a cricket and a grasshopper, because she swears those things don't know where they're flying, so they're bound to hit you.
I know.
I'm never going to tell her this cricket is this big. You know?
No. Yeah, get away from the volcano then. No, again, I don't like snakes and spiders and all these kind of things, and I live around them all the time, but I'm not looking for them. So, you know, the people that do night tours and they're going out, the people that like snakes and this, not, you know, this kind of stuff, they will find
there's
them.
People that are,
you know,
into,
I mean?
That
I don't go out looking for that. I like sloths and dolphins and swimming and, you know what I mean,
I'm not a nighttime jungle hacker.
Nighttime, I'm on my deck. I'm having a few brewskis with my friends.
No nocturnal stuff for you.
But there are some people that are into that.
No, hey, the people that love it, there's a lot for them. I mean, people that want to get into that,
there's a lot for them.
You will. You know, if you want to find them, chances are high. I repeat.
Yeah.
Chances are high.
It's so true. Very high.
Yeah. That's so good. That's so good.
So now I have to tell your story because Angel knows them. My cousin, she's married to my cousin. They came down 2 years ago in the summer with three women, two sisters, Stephanie. Hey, I'm going to say Stephanie Smith. They came in there and they knock on my door. They're staying with me and she knocks on my door at night and I had a screen door there. And I said, she goes, what's that sound? Without even thinking, I said, it's nothing. It's just a jaguar up in the mountain. Well, the rest of the trip, I have to go with a flashlight to the toilet with them.
Oh, yeah. Don't tell them it's a jaguar.
I didn't think about it. I just thought, I don't know. They don't come down and bother you.
Go big or go home, I guess.
They're way up in the mountain. They don't come down to the house.
Yeah.
But it was funny. And there
I was. You got to know how to speak to the tourists, man.
Yeah, well, when my family was staying here, right next door, they're like, whose chickens are all these running around in the yard? I'm like, those aren't chickens. Those are called the gray-necked wood rail. Those are birds that run around all the time. They're not chickens. They're like, whose chickens are these? I'm like, well, I guess those are God's chickens, you know?
If they don't know what a chicken is.
Yeah.
I get it. That's so funny. That is really good stuff. No, so listen, I understand there's different state parks over there. But if there was one that you could visit, you've seen them all, and I'm sure Jana's seen them all, but if there's one you could visit, because look, I'm more of the whales guy and the dolphins guy. I think that's an amazing thing. But if you're going and you just like everything, what is the park you want to go visit? Or what is the side you want to go to?
Well, I guess, we can go, there's your national park where you can break into everything. You know, when you come out of, you get off the plane, you can check into like Manuel Antonio Park.
Yeah. That's,
where there's beautiful beaches and sunsets. Yes. And there's monkeys and there's deer and there's sloths and there's all this stuff all around.
That's a cool one.
If you wake up early enough, you can walk on the beach by yourself. An hour later, there's 10,000 people there as well.
Oh,
and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's that. Okay. And then you have, the national parks, which are up in the mountain areas for bird watching and all this stuff too. You're in the
Yesterday Muerte, that area.
Yeah, there's just
the
bird watching.
Yeah,
people are checking off birds by 50 to 100 a day. You know what I mean? Like for the bird nerds, it's a mecca. You know what I mean? They're just like, what's going on? And so, and then eventually the OSA and the Corcovado National Park we have down here it's one of those where it's like you're in the Amazon, but it's, you don't have to worry about your life the entire time. You know what I mean? Like the Amazon, you're like, oh, I made it. But here, you don't have to worry about it. You can actually enjoy yourself more, right?
Yeah.
You get to see all this amazing, and you get to see like a tapir, pumas, things like this that are, these are bucket list things.
Marvelous.
You never see them. You don't want to see them in a zoo. You want to see them
No, doubt.
This is where you can do
Cotabundi, everything, Tara.
I always say, just stick to the south. The northern part has kind of been a little too overdone, and it's kind of dry and deserty up there. Stick to the middle of the country and head south, the Caribbean side, Tortuguero. Yeah. All in the boat area.
That's like
being, has a whole nother vibe. It's beautiful over there.
That's like being in like a Tarzan movie.
Absolutely. It's great food over there, and live reggae music, and all this stuff too. It's just really
Okay. Really well, we have got to wrap this show up. I can't believe it's been this long. Well, that was fast. Well, it's time to say goodbye. So, yeah. So
I had such a great time with you guys. You guys made me feel so comfortable.
I do. Thank you for all the information. I'm just so excited. Thank
no,
you.
Josh, listen. I'm done. Look, you described Costa Rica. That makes me regret not being out there yet.
No, he's
hey,
going.
You're always welcome, buddy. You're always welcome remember to that. Come down, and you can hang
thank
out with
you,
us.
Thank you,
Josh. We'll show you around. You got a lifetime. You got a lifetime guarantee as long as I'm alive.
Don't you die on me.
I'm here, buddy. Here we go.
All right. Until next week. Bye bye. I'll see y'all.
Jana, love you.
Love you too.
We'll see you next week, Jana, on the radio.
I'll see you. I'll see you next week. Okay. Bye bye.
You're listening to Jungle Jana Radio with Jungle Jana and Angel Garcia, only on LA Talk Radio.